This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Right now, there are some who suggest that we should pass the largest budget in state history. We will not.
The 2017 legislative session begins, and the battle continues between House Speaker Richard Corcoran and Governor Rick Scott.
Incentivizing businesses to grow and create more and better jobs is not welfare.
Politico's Matt Dixon helps to break down what's ahead.
There is some policy agreement that with Democrats and Corcoran that that economic incentives and using taxpayer dollars for that can be a bad thing.
Congressman Al Lawson steps in at one of the most popular pre-session parties.
But I get a chance to see a lot of old friends and some people that we can work with in the legislature.
And when it comes to healthcare options, some say Medicare Advantage reigns supreme.
My doctor, he caught my husband's prostate cancer.
All that and more coming up on episode 97 of The Rotunda. So here's how the first week of the 2017 legislative session went. The speeches. Governor Rick Scott and House Speaker Richard Corcoran continued their fight over terms like corporate welfare and the budget. Scott is proposing an $83.5 billion spending plan, the largest in the state's history. Corcoran is saying no way.
Because right now there are some who suggest that we should pass the largest budget in state history. We will not.
As you hear, tensions are high despite attempts to keep up appearances on opening day. Meanwhile, Senate President Joe Negron focused on his childhood, higher education, and the environment. I think that sums it up.
Incentivizing businesses to grow and create more and better jobs is not welfare.
All right, as you'll hear, Governor Rick Scott used most of his State of the State address to try and set the record straight in hopes to put an end to Speaker Corcoran's winning crusade.
We questioned an agency's expenses and exposed their failures and their abuses. We forced another agency into the sunshine. We sued a rapper and won, only to reveal more wasteful spending.
But Governor Rick Scott says those problems can easily be fixed and appears set on using his veto power to stop Corcoran's plans to abolish Enterprise Florida, the economic development agency, and drastically reduce the amount of dollars flowing into the state's tourism marketing programs at Visit Florida.
It's easy to throw out catchphrases like picking winners and losers and corporate welfare. By the way, I don't like either of those things. I doubt anybody in this chamber does. But that's not what we're doing. We are competing with 49 other states and hundreds of countries for jobs.
So typically, the governor has the final say on whether a piece of legislation becomes law. He can use his executive veto power to kill a bill passed by both chambers. But each house, by a two-thirds vote, can bring that bill back to life. So Corcoran decides to show the power of his chamber by telling Democrats to get behind his plan, to pretty much show the governor who's boss. Politico's Matt Dixon was there during Corcoran's call to Democrats.
The House Democratic Caucus every Wednesday has this delightfully titled dinner. It's called Wonderful Wednesday, and the whole caucus gets together, and it's a dinner paid for by the Florida Democratic Party, and they sort of get together and just, you know, talk shop, and they'll have speakers. And one of the speaker this week was House Speaker Richard Corcoran, who, in case you've, you know, been under a rock, is a Republican and a pretty conservative guy. So the idea of him meeting with House Democrats, someone told me about it, piqued my interest, so I went to go attend the meeting. And he essentially made the pitch that they should support his number one priority, which is two pieces of legislation, one abolishing Enterprise Florida, and another one putting a whole set of restrictions on Visit Florida. He deems those sort of corporate welfare organizations. And he took it right to House Democrats, made his pitch. And what he said is he kind of was firm to an extent, said these bills are going to pass without you. We don't need you to vote for them. But what he said is Democrats are needed to send a message to the governor. He said, we need a veto-proof majority because the governor opposes these bills, and for that, I need you. And it appeared to work to a certain extent because I haven't finalized my tally yet, but I believe 23 or 24 House Democrats, which is over a majority of their caucus, voted with him today when those bills were passed off the House floor.
So what's in it for the Democrats? That's my question.
That is a big question. I do think there is some policy alignment there. Democrats have historically, used the corporate welfare tag as well. I think there are some policy agreement that with Democrats in Corcoran that that economic incentives and using taxpayer dollars for that can be a bad thing. And there was actually even talk on the floor today about you can support this bill if you're a Bernie Sanders progressive or a Ted Cruz conservative, because it aligns with sort of both types of political thought. So I think there is some policy alignment, but this Tallahassee being, you know, a transactional place, and as transactional place as any, I would guess, I mean, the first thing you would think about is budget things, you know, getting budget priorities or getting things into the House's version of the budget they might not otherwise. That we haven't, you know, the policy subcommittees and the appropriation subcommittees haven't put out any budget plans yet, so we don't know, you know, exactly what's happening. But generally, if you go along with the speaker's priorities, you can expect something. It's better for you than it is worse.
Yeah. So after this story came out and it was very firm, what reaction did you see from, like, you know, the governor's office or Enterprise Florida or people who are advocating for Visit Florida right now?
Yeah, it was crickets. I don't think anyone necessarily wanted to engage. And it was, I didn't get any direct reaction from that story. I think the only reaction, you know, we see is the vote sheets and seeing how many House Democrats were with the speaker. I don't think, like I say, it was certainly over 20, between 23 and 25, and I don't think it would have been near that number, or they would have guessed near that number previous to that meeting.
Yeah. Anything that the Democrats are pushing for that you see that they can use this as a bargaining chip at all?
Not yet. Last year, the Black Caucus, who is all, I believe, all Democratic in the House, maybe there might be one Republican member, had used this vote on economic incentives, sort of a similar vote, a similar bill, is leveraged to try to stop to get moving a stand your ground gun bill that was a bill they were supportive of and they wanted to get it to committee hearing. So they took a caucus position on the bill and tried to use that leverage to put forward a gun bill. That did not work, but it is one example of how you can use leverage on votes like this to try to further your own policy priorities. I don't know what exactly the angle is yet at this point, but, you know, my guess is, and this isn't a bad thing, if they're smart, they have an angle, and I'm just not sure what it is yet.
So how would you assess the first week?
This is technically the first week, but it feels like we're in about week 70. The committee weeks leading up to the open of session were pretty chaotic with the fight over Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida, which sort of features the House Speaker against the governor and of sort of a very brutal inter-party fight. And I sort of expect more of the same. It seems as though that sniping over these big bills between the governor and the House are going to kind of outline what happens for the rest of the session, you know, including the state budget, which is every year's biggest priority.
That's Politico's Matt Dixon on the beat. So speaking of using stand your ground as a bargaining chip, let's head over to the Senate side, where so far they appear to be much better behaved. Senate President Joe Negron added a couple of new items to his list of priorities, including changes to stand your ground.
I know there are different points of view on this particular proposal, and I respect that. I stand firm that the state of Florida and a prosecutor has the burden of proof at each and every stage of every proceeding in that case to prove your guilt beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt.
Negron is also hoping to tackle religious freedom issues in public schools.
To act as if somehow religion is the one area of life that cannot be talked about and that people give up their right to express themselves in the public square, I think it's important that we make a statement as a Senate that we support no coercion. No one ever should be required to do anything that they don't want to do voluntarily. But let's not go to the other extreme where we're taking away people's rights to free speech, people's right to practice their faith in a way that they believe is appropriate.
He also reiterated work on making Florida's higher education institutions, particularly universities, elite destinations where every student can attend. And he also called attention to the environment.
Water quality and water availability is an issue all over Florida.
Negron is at war with farmers and agricultural businesses south of Lake Okeechobee over his plans to get the state to move forward with a $2.4 billion reservoir project.
I'm confident that we can work with the agricultural community in a way that accomplishes this goal and does not harm anyone's business or anyone's right to make a living.
Negron's proposal, Senate Bill 10, is aimed at reducing polluted water releases from the lake into estuaries to the east and west.
I believe there's a consensus that has developed that we need to have additional storage south of the lake as an essential component. And we can do other things. We can look at northern storage to keep water coming into the lake. The governor has proposed, and I support, septic to sewer conversions, which will also help. But in the end, we're going to have a place for the water to go. Otherwise, the Army Corps of Engineers will continue its practice of simply opening the floodgates and destroying communities east and west.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com to keep up with all the stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics.
The wait is over. Republicans finally have a bill to repeal and replace Obamacare. I am holding it in my hand. It is a real bill, and it is stranger than I expected it to be.
The strange thing is, from all the rhetoric, the pathway to repeal and replace isn't so clear. Here's Democratic Senator Bill Nelson.
And now there's so much fighting within the Republican majority that they can't figure out what to put in a replacement. As a result, what is coming out of the House right now is going to be dead on arrival in the Senate. You already see about 8 Republican senators are saying, I don't like this and I don't like that.
That includes Senator Marco Rubio. Here he is on talk radio speaking with Joel Malkin with WJNO.
Well, obviously it's not 100% of what I would want to see. And so the best way to think about it is...
Republican Congressman Ron DeSantis says there needs to be a more aggressive plan to ensure costs to consumers go down.
Are we repealing enough of Obamacare so that our replacement is coherent as a matter of policy? And as I'm reading this bill, I think that there's a lot of somersaults being done to try to get around the budget rules so as not to offend this mythical parliamentarian in the Senate.
So at a time when there is a lot of uncertainty surrounding healthcare, a group of senior advocates are sharing their stories about what's giving them the best advantage they could ask for.
I am required to go to my doctor every 3 or 4 months and get blood work and see him personally a week later after he has the results. He caught my husband's prostate cancer through one of those examinations.
That's 81-year-old Carol Berman of West Palm Beach talking about the benefits of being enrolled in the Medicare Advantage program.
You know how men don't like to go to the doctor? We women are always pushing them to go. Under this plan, you know, they go.
Medicare Advantage is extremely popular among seniors, providing comprehensive coverage to more than 18 million across the country, of which Berman is among the 1.7 million here in Florida. She has a simpler way of explaining to her friends about the advantages in Medicare Advantage.
When I talk about it, I call them perks, because you can't get this on just plain Medicare. And one of the ones that I use all the time, unfortunately, between my husband and myself, because now I'm 81, is the emergency room hours that they offer 7 days a week. So once when my husband did something in the afternoon and he cut himself pretty badly, he went to his doctor's office and he could get treated on the spot, and all of his records were there.
The program is also a popular option for those who are suffering with disabilities.
Because I'm disabled, I'm just a proponent, a very loud proponent for Medicare Advantage. I don't know what would happen to me if we didn't have it. I don't know how I would be insured.
Mary Villar has been disabled since 2009, managing a variety of illnesses, from lupus to migraines, and a very recent discovery of lung disease.
It's a non-tuberculosis mycobacterium.
She's only in her mid-50s, and she says it took her some time to discover the program.
You know, I just took regular Medicare at the time and was being nickeled and dimed death. So during that first year, that's when I did my research and realized that Medicare Advantage was way, way over the top. So since that time, I've been trying to educate people to understand that there is this wonderful plan out here that people don't know about.
Medicare Advantage is all about providing high-quality preventative care at a low cost.
Because most charge no monthly premiums, and many have no deductibles for the medical portion. They all have deductibles for prescription drugs. you can't help that anymore. But that's helpful to those of us on tight budgets.
Advocates for Medicare Advantage say a big selling point is that the program keeps the strain off of the Medicaid system.
We have to look at healthcare as a continuum.
Randy Hunt is the CEO of the Area Agency for Aging in Central Florida.
If you think about a supply and demand curve, not everybody can get, you know, subsidized health care. And so the people that can pay for their own health care and have a better quality of health care, probably going to keep them, you know, out of the public arena, probably for hopefully their entire life, because there just aren't enough dollars to go around for everybody. So we think, one, it provides, you know, more choice to consumers. They're paying for that extra service. It's not being given to them. They're paying for it. And then hopefully then they will never need to come into the arena where they need us to subsidize them, because there's, you know, far too many people there now anyway.
So there are a number of services to minimize the crossover to Medicaid. One is prevention. For instance, Carol Berman hits the gym through the Silver Sneaker program.
They have Zumba classes and yoga classes and cardio classes, and it also becomes a social thing, because you end up going and seeing the same people all the time. And, you know, you encourage each other to go. And this keeps us all, I have severe back problems, and this has helped me.
According to enrollment data, Advantage plans provide coverage to 44% of Florida's Medicare populations. Mary Villar.
The plans focus on preventive care early on, and this saves money for everyone. The program is proven to cut down on hospital stays and lowers the likelihood of readmissions.
The Coalition for Medicare Choices is urging Congress to maintain Medicare Advantage, touting their bipartisan success working with the likes of Senator Bill Nelson, Republican Congressman Brian Mass, and others. To learn more, visit MedicareChoices.org. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes. This program is supported by listeners like you. Visit rotundapodcast.com to send your donation or to learn more about sponsorship options. And as always, thanks for your support. The annual party that kicks off the opening of session is at the Associated Industries of Florida. It's a who's who type of event, a tradition that I've not missed in quite some time. Of all the familiar faces around, I caught up with former Senator and now Congressman Al Lawson for a brief chat during the mixer.
Welcome back to Florida. How many times have you attended this event?
How you doing?
Oh, maybe over 30 times, starting from 1982. So I guess I have a long history of coming back. I was real happy to come back today, because it's just before opening the session. I can't be here for session, but I'll be back in D.C. But I get a chance to see a lot of old friends and some people that we can work with in the legislature.
So what's going on in D.C.? What's life like there? Are you still considered new? Still learning your way around?
Well, because of seniority, you're going to always be considered new. But I've been able to make a lot of friends and work with a lot of different people across party lines. And so I'm doing quite well in that regard. We just got to see if we can get something passed, which they say you hardly ever get anything passed as a freshman. But there's a lot of things that I'm interested in, and I feel I have the opportunity with the people I've been working with to make some things happen.
What's the biggest difference that you've seen from your time here in Florida to being up there in D.C.?
It's much more partisan in D.C., and that's because I guess people have been there for a long time. And so with this class, I came in 115th class. Everybody's doing research because they think that we can break down some of the partisanship. So the Kennedy School at Harvard has had all us up there, and they've had us down in Williamsburg, Virginia. And so we're meeting with each other on a regular basis to break down, let them know the campaigns are over and that we need to work on for the best benefit of people in America.
How are you dealing with the Trump administration and what we're seeing? What's the plan to deal with this administration that is unlike any other?
Well, we thought that by now things would be much more relaxed, but it never ceased to amaze me. It changes every week. And so he's having a lot of difficulty even with his own party, because they're trying to go along to get along, but they can't figure it out. Every day he comes up with something new. And it could be because of lack of experience, and serving, and he didn't realize the magnitude of what it takes to be able to run this country.
So the 2016 legislative session and the first episode of this podcast kicked off with news about then-Representative Frank Artiles getting into a bar fight at Clyde's. Let's take a walk down memory lane with Politico's Mark Caputo.
I think something went down because here's what we know. We know that he was accused of punching a college kid. And the person who accused him of doing this... Now, I do have to say that while I could see where something might have happened, I do find it a little tough to believe that, like, Artiles actually punched him. In fact, he said if I punched him, he wouldn't be standing up or walking around or he'd be in the hospital. That's probably true. Frank Artiles is a Marine, and he's a big dude. That having been said, is that this is the second time he's been accused of laying hands on someone in a violent fashion at a bar. Mm-hmm. It'd probably be a good idea for him to either wear a body cam, perhaps, if he's being falsely accused, or probably, you know, not put himself in the position where he's going to wind up being accused of these sorts of things.
Well, now Artiles has squeezed his way back into this kickoff episode of this new legislative session. By the way, it's now Senator Frank Artiles, and this time he's crashing this show for appearing at NASCAR, dropping the flag at a truck race at this year's Daytona 500 weekend event sponsored by Nextera, the parent company of Florida Power and Light. What's the big deal, you ask? Well, Senator Artiles is the chairman of the Florida Senate's Communications, Energy, and Public Utilities Committees. Anyway, with that story, I reached out to former Florida Public Service Commissioner Nathan Skop. What do you make of this?
It's very disturbing. It's clearly the legislature putting special interests ahead of his constituents by advancing these anti-consumer pieces of legislation, which are basically favorable to the utility at the expense of FPL ratepayers.
There's going to be surely more reporting on this, but what do you make overall? Do you think he is stepping over bounds by having this fundraiser at this event and just being out there waving the flag?
Well, I mean, I'll leave that to him. Again, he has to answer for his own conduct, but it certainly does not look favorable. Certainly I think his constituents would be upset by the appearance of impropriety of wearing a Nextera jacket and in turn advancing or fast-tracking these two pieces of legislation through the Senate. Part of the issue on the House side, House Bill 1043 is a legislative tax on Florida ratepayers and corporate welfare for FPL.
All right, as we're in the midst of seeing the push out and the end of corporate welfare in the House, this is something where the House Speaker is fighting against. What else do you have issue with these legislation that's before the bodies?
Well, primarily, typically it's the Florida Public Service Commission that carries water for the utilities. But in this case, both pieces of legislation are apparently designed to overcome court rulings in the state of Florida. And basically serve as a legislative workaround to overcome the court rulings which were adverse to the utilities.
Anything else that you'd like to add?
No, obviously we want good legislation. Utilities are constituents also. But again, when you see members of the legislature carrying water by introducing legislation that clearly benefits the utilities, primarily FPL, over the interest of the ratepayers, obviously it's a big concern.
So we'll have to see how this plays out, thanks to former Florida Public Service Commissioner Nathan Skop. Do you have a gently used suit, maybe your old power suit, that could potentially inspire others with the same amount of confidence you felt whenever you wore it? Well, Chester Spellman, the CEO of Volunteer Florida, the state's lead agency for volunteerism and national service, is back here on the program to talk about the second annual Suits for Session.
March 15th, we're going to be on the third floor rotunda collecting new and gently used professional attire that will support job seekers across the state.
All right. So how did this all start?
Well, this was last year. We were looking for an opportunity to come together and unite around service at the state capitol. We realized there was a bit of a void in that there was not a large-scale capitol service project. And so our team came up with the idea of suits for session, and we realized that there are so many individuals across our states who are looking for a job or looking to maintain a job, and they don't have the professional attire to do so. And so we realized that partnering together with the private sector and state employees and legislators to come together and do something as simple as donating a piece of clothing, we realized how great of an impact that can make in the lives of Floridians, and we're excited about this second annual event.
So when we're talking about suits, I see you have on a nice blue suit. What makes a good suit for you when you're going suit shopping?
One that fits well in a brand that is good reputation.
So with that, when you do find a suit, how do you feel when you're wearing your suits?
Well, that's the beauty of this project is having a professional attire suit that fits well. It comes along with it comes confidence, and we're hoping that the individuals that we, the hundreds if not thousands of Floridians that we donate these suits to, we believe that this will give them a sense of confidence that will help them to excel in a career.
So who are all participating in this?
Well, we have a lot of partners. Almost every state agency we are partnering with, and they will be collecting professional attire at their office. And then on March 15th at the Capitol, we will have many people come by our booth in the third floor rotunda to make donations. And all of the donations will be benefiting organizations across the state. So we're calling this a Capitol service project that has a statewide impact. And we'll be supporting job seekers through a variety of organizations, including the Chapman Partnership in Miami, Dress for Success, Tampa Bay, Echo Outreach Ministries right here in Tallahassee, and Bridges of America in Orlando, a reentry program. And then a new partner is the Florida State University Unconquered Scholars Program.
Oh, wow.
So we're just really excited to have a lot of good partner organizations that will be making donations, but also will be receiving donations and providing those donated items to job seekers in need.
So if they are not in Tallahassee, I guess there's a website that they can go and find out where to donate their suits on this new statewide effort?
Absolutely. They can go to volunteerflorida.org/suits for more information. The majority of our donations will take place here in Tallahassee, but if someone wants to make a donation outside of Tallahassee, we will be more than happy to point them in the right direction.
All right, Chester Spellman, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And with that, we are out of time for this episode. The second part of my reporting trip to Cuba will just have to be pushed to the next episode, so join us then. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Politico's Matt Dixon, Volunteer Florida's Chester Spellman, Congressman Al Lawson, and those members of the Coalition for Medicare Choices for sharing their stories. Oh, and also to former Public Service Commissioner Nathan Scopp. Be sure to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com. And most importantly, join us again next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.